The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. The big game is right around the corner and the teams are set. So check out the Rich Eisen Show on Podcast One Sportsnet as the legendary sportscaster analyzes the plays and predicts what'll happen on February 3rd. Download the Rich Eisen Show every weekday on Podcast One Sportsnet or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. We are live on YouTube. Welcome, everybody on YouTube. Welcome, everybody listening in the podcast world on whatever medium you're listening.
Podcast world. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Good. How about you, Steve?
You're just smiling. That's weird. You happy?
I mean, yeah, moderately.
Nice.
Yeah?
That's a win. I consider that a win when Sam rolls in on a Monday morning moderately happy. Okay weekend of football?
Not as much drama as we pretty wanted. Pretty crappy weekend of football, honestly. The games were not close bar one, I guess. A bit of a disappointment given that they looked on paper to be some interesting games.
Yeah, so I think we'll get into every game. So we're going to review all four games from the divisional round. Do we want to do a little post-mortem cause of death for some of these losing teams?
Sure.
We did that a
they
few
were
weeks
fun.
Ago. All right, so we'll do that as we go.
Okay.
But let's stick with the game recaps first to just keep it clean. Mm-hmm. All right, so overall, though, I think what happens is I think I mentioned this last week. There's a little bit of overreaction. Come on, Matt. There's a little overreaction to wild card weekend, right? All the divisional teams are sitting at home. The wild card, four teams have to win in wild card weekend, right? They're obligated to win. So four teams have to, you know, have momentum and look good and be the hottest team in the NFL and the team you don't want to face and all these different things. But then people are like, oh man, that divisional round, just proving that the bye and the rest is the most important thing. It's like, no, the best teams are on the bye and they're all playing at home. Of course they have the advantage. They're all the better team.
Well, certainly the home is a huge thing. I mean, there's multiple teams, almost all of the teams, in fact, in this round are markedly better at home than they are on the road. Think Dallas, right? Dallas is a completely different team at home than they are when they have to travel. The Chiefs are the same thing. So, yeah, the home field thing is huge. You're right. By and large, the better team is the team that's sitting there with the rest.
I'd say the Chargers are the only team this week, right?
The Chargers are the one exception to that, and they just completely... this was pretty embarrassing for the Chargers, so that there's something to be said there. There is that thing, though. Everybody this week was banging on about, look at the impact the rest week has.
Yeah, right.
The bye week, the extra rest, they come out fresh and they destroy all these teams. It's like, well, yeah, but, I mean, by and large, you would have expected all these teams to win if they had met in the regular season.
Yeah, right.
So it's not, I mean, was it rest or was it just they're better?
I think it's just they're better, Sam. It's pretty much what it is. Let's get into the games. Saturday afternoon, Indianapolis Colts at the Kansas City Chiefs. I think weather was a bit of a factor with the downfield passing game, because even Mahomes, who put up pretty good numbers, he was throwing some screwballs, and as Chris pointed out, he was throwing some wobbly downfield passes. Luck's arm didn't look great throwing the ball down the field, but this was not the outcome you expected. I mean, the Chiefs essentially threw a shutout on defense until the very, very end of the game. They had a block, you know, Indianapolis had the block punt for a touchdown that gave them a little bit of life, but Kansas City controlled this game from start to finish. This was the one game we said it'll probably be a shootout. Andrew Luck can go toe-to-toe with this Chiefs team, but the Chiefs defense played pretty well. Luck didn't look great, and it was no shootout at all.
Yeah, so the home field advantage thing may be more important for Kansas City than any of the other teams in this, because their defense, their defense is what's different when they're at home to on the road. Their offense has put up points wherever they've gone. We've said all season long that any game they're in is going to be a shootout, and then the question is just whether their defense can show up enough that they win the shootout. But actually, when they're playing at home, it turns out their defense is capable of not just, you know, slowing down an opposing offense to the point where they win a shootout, but actually making the game pretty comfortable. So now there is a caveat that this Colts team isn't great. You know, they were 1-5 at one point. They had to go on a run to get into the postseason.
They also, for everybody that said that they were hot and you don't want to play the Colts, they got shut out by the Jaguars in December.
Yeah.
Like, recently, they put up a zero.
They're a dangerous team that's capable of doing some things.
Dangerous, absolutely.
Right.
Dangerous team.
But they are clearly not a better team than the Chiefs. And the logic behind anybody picking the Colts, and remember, my logic was that I needed to pick an upset to get over Nathan in the pick rankings. So the logic for anyone seriously picking the Colts was basically just that Andrew Luck would have to have one of the games of his life and is capable of doing that.
Now, against
that
the Chiefs D too.
Right.
That was my logic.
Yeah.
He dug himself. He didn't dig himself a hole. The Colts dug themselves a hole, and you just always expect Luck to be able to dig them out.
And it didn't happen, and we just saw the better team win here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's about right. Luck did have one of his worst games of the season overall. The offensive line actually wasn't that bad. I mean, they got a little bit of pressure against Braden Smith. It was the right side was bad. Braden Smith and Mark Lewinsky, they gave up the pressure. Braden Smith, the guy that we had been touting for a while, saying, look, he's had a really nice season, especially as a rookie that's moved from guard. He gave up 6 total pressures, including the strip sack to Dee Ford. But I do think that's what makes Kansas City defensively a little dangerous at home, is you get the home crowd, you get the noise, you get the snap count that you can work off of, and they've got 3 legitimate pass rushers with Dee Ford, Justin Houston, and Chris Jones that can get after it.
Ironically, this time, Quentin Nelson was their best offensive lineman, but nobody's going to talk about it because they got their ass kicked.
He was.
So it's not a story.
No pressures, dominant in the run game.
Also, I didn't see a highlight reel pancake and teabagging for them to really get excited about, but he was way better in this game than he was the last game, and yet it's not going to be the story because
they didn't win.
Nobody cares. That's just the ironic way of, you know, the way people react to offensive linemen. If you don't have the highlight reel play that I can put up in a quick, you know, Twitter moment, doesn't count.
So one of the underrated stories for the Chiefs is Charvarius Ward playing cornerback for them. A guy out of nowhere, undrafted free agent out of Middle Tennessee State. He started week 16 against Seattle, and that was when Andy Reid was like, yeah, we're playing the young guys, we're getting these guys out there and just giving them a shot. And he didn't look great against Seattle. He gave up 5 for 7 for 110, did break up a pass, but gave up 110 yards. But over the last couple weeks, he gave up only 43 yards against Oakland, only 42 yards against Indianapolis, and he broke up 4 passes over the last 2 weeks. So this is one of those stories. Everybody's talking about, you know, C.J. Anderson and the Rams and how he's, you know, stepped in their running game. But a guy like Ward, just out of nowhere, becoming a starting cornerback and making some plays on the ball, that's an important story for a secondary that's been torched most of the year.
Right. There's something to this idea that both the Chiefs and the Eagles were forced to take a look at a bunch of young guys buried on their depth chart in terms of the secondary. And both those teams have actually gotten some impressive play out of these guys when they've had a little bit of time. Like, early on, it was pretty rough. Those guys got exposed, but they got some playing time, and they've all actually started to make some plays down the stretch. Now, obviously, the Eagles, that's over now, but, you know, a guy like Craven LeBlanc was making a ton of plays yesterday. We'll get to that later. And Ward has made a whole bunch of plays as well. And he's a guy that actually graded pretty well for us in college, albeit, you know, not the greatest sample size in the world, a little bit over 1,100 snaps, but solid PFF grading, 76, 79 over 2 seasons. Not the best coverage stats in the world, but more than enough there to show you that he could do some things at the next level.
Yeah, and well,
we're starting to see that.
Yeah, so that's been an interesting development for the Chiefs. It still doesn't make you feel great about Ward plus Daniel Sorensen, Jordan Lucas, Steven Nelson, and Kendall Fuller as your secondary that you're rolling out there every single week.
Yeah.
But again, when you combine that with Dee Ford getting his five pressures and Chris Jones getting his four pressures plus three batted passes, Sam. He had an off week with only three batted passes.
I mean, he must have been making Booger so mad.
Yeah. I mean, he had 25.
There were four batted passes in that game. That's four times.
Four failures.
Yeah, four times the defense was eschewing their pass rush responsibility, sticking their hands up in the air, batting the pass away. I mean, that is just unacceptable.
The point is, when you combine Justin Houston, Dee Ford, Chris Jones with this young secondary that might be overachieving at times, then you get the game like you did on Saturday from Kansas City. But yeah, there were batted passes left and right. Chris Jones batted three on only 25 rushes. The Colts had a bunch too, didn't they?
I don't know. I just know that.
I have to click the other team. That was a game. They had one.
Yeah, that was a game.
But it felt like there were a lot of batted passes.
Well, there were five, Steve. That's quite a lot.
That is a lot. It's a lot of batted passes in the football game. So credit the Chiefs. We talk about defense not really being predictable. This was not, this wasn't what I expected. So how much do we chalk it up to Andrew Luck just didn't throw the ball well? He did miss a ton of throws, left one behind that definitely should have been intercepted, and they just did not have the downfield passing game that they usually have. How much is that Andrew Luck? How much is that, pretty difficult passing conditions as well?
Yeah, the passing conditions weren't great. They were getting some pressure from the Chiefs, pass rush. A lot of those passes, five or four passes for Luck got batted down. Those are all things that contributed to Luck not having a big day. And then he did, miss a bunch of passes as well. I think there's also something to be said for the fact that T.Y. Hilton was clearly not 100%.
Yeah.
I think it was their Week 17 game, but the game where he kind of came back, had a pretty big game, it was a big part of them actually making it that far. He didn't look healthy in that game. Like, he busted up his foot or his ankle or something. You could see him kind of limping around. And I remember thinking at the time, I wonder how much that's going to come back and haunt them in the playoffs. I think this is probably the game where it did. We started to see that, he came up big when he needed to, and he played through that injury at the time. But he clearly wasn't the guy we've expected him to be. Plus, the conditions not helping him be the kind of factor he could be. You take away him from that offense, and you're not left with a whole lot.
We're going to talk a lot about what we've defined as balance. I think this is going to be a key theme for the rest of the show here, especially when we talk about the Patriots and some of the other offenses. I think the balance thing that we've talked about, which is balance in football, is not about run-pass splits. It's not run 50 times, pass 50 times. It's be able to win every different way. It's be able to throw the ball short, intermediate, deep, and run the ball and be able to hit every level of the field. I thought Kansas City showed the balance because Mahomes didn't hit a pass over 20 yards, but he still threw for 278, had over half of his yards came after the catch because Kansas City is not just Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball down the field. He's great at doing it, but when it's not there, they've got the screen game. They have the intermediate game. They've got the run game. That was balance. When you look at Luck, he had 76% of his yards come through the air, meaning only 24% came after the catch. Now, on one hand, you say, hey, good job, quarterback. You're doing all the work. It's not always the case, but I think it showed Indianapolis didn't have the short passing game. They didn't have the balance to hit every single level of the field. So when the downfield passing game isn't there with Andrew Luck, they had nothing.
Who was the head coach, one of the new hires that came out and said basically the same thing, was talking about balance?
Oh, it was not,
was it
Denver?
Fangio.
Vic Fangio. Said the same thing. It was like he copied and pasted my tweet from last week where I said it's throwing short, intermediate, deep, and oh, by the way, run the ball too.
Right, and it's not like he's the only one,
I didn't invent this.
Right, Mike Leach has been saying it for years that balance is not... Well, because he's the guy that only ever passes. So,
well, Mike Leach's idea of balance, what he says is, I want to get 25% to my X receiver, my Y receiver, my Z receiver, and my H receiver. That's balance for him.
But the point is, there's a whole bunch of people that have been saying for years, balance is not run versus pass.
Right.
Balance is a whole bunch of other things that essentially keep the defense off balance. Like, that's how you define success and balance for an offense. It's keeping a defense off their balance. And you're right, the Chiefs had it in this game. They've been able to do an awful lot with that passing game. Plus, they actually did have a reasonable run threat. This emergence of Damian Williams in the backfield has been pretty impressive. Like, they sent Kareem Hunt packing after his off-field incident. At least the off-field incident became public. And Damian Williams has looked really good carrying the ball. Now, the concern there is that he isn't the receiving weapon that Kareem Hunt has been.
Right.
Like, one of the things that made Kareem Hunt such a good player is that he could go deep downfield out of the backfield and be a real viable weapon in the passing game.
Yeah, we've seen Williams in the screen game a little bit, but Hunt has that extra.
Damian Williams, I don't think, at least yet, can do that. He's not that same kind of threat, but he at least gives them that legitimate running threat that they can have success that way. The Chiefs, I think, at home become this really fascinating team because they may be as good as anybody else out there if their defense crawls back towards average. Steve,
there you go.
Just get somewhere near average, and at home, I think they are.
No, yeah, I hear you. So we'll get into the Patriots-Chiefs a little bit later in the week. The one more point, that's this, we'll get into it with the Rams game as well. We always like to talk about the run games overrated and a lot of that stuff here. This was a weekend where the winning teams did run the ball pretty well, right? But I think, again, the underlying point is, why did they run the ball well? I think it's because the best passing teams run the ball well. The best run-blocking teams run the ball well. And, oh, by the way, you have a running back over there that's going to accumulate the stats as well. The Chiefs ran the ball well and have been able to put a running back in there because of the balance factor, because they're so good at attacking every other level of the field. The Rams, same thing. You have a scheme that is setting the running back up for success. The Patriots did the same thing. The Saints do it as well. So all of these teams have great offensive balance. Oh, by the way, the running game is a part of that. It doesn't work off the running game. It's just a part of the whole.
Yeah, I mean, we have arguably the top four offenses in the NFL remaining in the postseason.
Yeah,
but
they're
good
at everything.
Three of those four teams have top 10 offensive lines by PFF's offensive line rankings at the end of the season. The fourth is in the top 15. So there's no team left in the postseason with a bottom half offensive line. That, I think, speaks volumes because multiple teams with a bottom half offensive line were eliminated in the playoffs.
And they all have top 10 quarterbacks. Our top two quarterbacks, Breeze and Mahomes. Brady was fifth in the regular season, and I think Goff was eighth. That's what's remaining.
Right.
So the Chiefs' win against the Indianapolis Colts was not what I expected, you know, as far as the game flow goes, but impressive win by the Chiefs. Let's get to the Saturday night game. Dallas Cowboys at the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams win 30-22. And
did we have a primary cause of death for the Colts?
I feel like we could do like a whole segment. I think the Cowboys, we really need to have one that we just make like, we'll make it like a whole segment at the end.
Okay.
I think we'll come back to it.
All right.
Okay. So let's discuss Rams and Cowboys. 30-22 win for the Rams. The rushing attack for the Rams was very efficient, with C.J. Anderson coming in, 23 carries for 123, and then his backup, Todd Gurley, with 16 carries for 115.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. C.J. Anderson, two touchdowns. Gurley had one. They combined to force seven missed tackles between them. I think that's one of those things with the Rams, with their offense. When you see all the yardage that they get, and comparatively, the missed tackle numbers aren't that great, right? When you have 23 carries, 60, they combined for what, 39 carries, only forced seven missed tackles, but they ran the ball for over almost 240 yards between the two of them.
Yeah.
That tells me the scheme and the offensive line is giving them some holes. They're taking what's there. They're, you know, finishing runs pretty well. Gurley had that really nice touchdown run, but they don't make a ton of guys miss in open space.
Yeah, but this the Rams' offensive line was one of the liabilities in the playoffs, according to Booger.
Oh, God.
Called out by Andrew Whitworth after the game, by the way.
He called out Booger?
Andrew Whitworth did, yeah.
He did?
Yeah. Because, actually, the Rams' offensive line has been one of the best in the league
this
season.
It was a poor take from Booger, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
again, Booger, if I was talking to you to your face, I would say that's a poor take.
It's an awful take.
Because, in his point, I saw him follow up with some tweets, was, well, did you see the Eagles and Bears games? Well, yes, when you go up against two out of the three best defensive fronts, sometimes the defense is going to win and do a pretty good job, and that was the case. But if you're looking at the whole season, the Rams, one of the best offensive lines in the NFL.
Yeah.
Top three.
The Rams' offensive line in this game did not allow either a sack or a hit on Jared Goff, and combined allowed just two hurries.
The one hit was allowed by Todd Gurley.
Yes.
That was the one time Jared Goff officially got hit.
So Gurley and Tyler Higbee, tight end, allowed the same amount of total pressure as the entire offensive line combined in this game. So that right there is a pretty big part of this game not going Dallas's way. Literally, almost no pressure whatsoever on Jared Goff. Plus, this idea that if you're going to do that, the chances are they're going to be running the ball, and they couldn't stop that either. This went basically the way we were predicting it, right? That Dallas did come out with the game plan that had stymied this team down the stretch in those games, like the Bears game, the Eagles game.
Yep.
They did come out kind of dropping people into shallow zones, trying to take away the passing game, effectively daring the Rams to run the ball with Todd Gurley. And this time, instead of saying, no, we want the passing game, the Rams said, okay, let's run it. And they loaded it up with Todd Gurley and CJ Anderson, and they took advantage of those light fronts, and they ran the hell over the Dallas Cowboys.
If you run for 5 to 7 yards a pop, that becomes valuable. Like, if you can ensure that you're going to run for 5+ yards per carry, I'm not saying rush 60 times, but that's obviously a more efficient brand of playing football. But it goes back to, again, that the numbers that everybody's finding is that successful runs start with actually the level of play, the quarterback, then the offensive line, right? All these other things. And then, by the way, it's the running back. This really exemplified that.
Yeah, I mean, this was a really big game for the Rams, because my big question for them heading into this game was, had teams started to figure them out down the stretch? Which is, if you take away the one thing, or if you've identified the thing they want to do, and you figured out how to take that away on defense, they hadn't yet shown the ability to adjust and to make, you know, the change off the back of that and go to something else in a way that great teams do. You know, they figure out what you're taking away, they go to something else, and they still have success. The Rams hadn't done that yet, and they'd struggled when teams had taken that away. This is the first game where they figured it out. They went, okay, if you're going to take away that, we'll just run the ball 39 times between those two players, and we'll win that way. I think that's huge for them, because ultimately the Rams are a really good team. They are still the number one graded team at PFF overall. This is a very good team that had its, and everybody gives the credit to Sean McVay and this magician system, but it had kind of been figured out towards the end of the season, and this is the first time we've seen, okay, he's made the adjustment. He's at least figured out.
They have the adjustments.
How
they
to
have
go
balance.
Away from that.
It's huge. Did you see the Dallas defensive grades?
Yeah, it's all bad.
The highest grade, other than Damian Wilson, who played 10 snaps, DeMarcus Lawrence with a 62.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody on the Dallas team played below average. 62 snaps for DeMarcus Lawrence, which also matched his PFF grade for the game. Their defensive tackles, Caron Reed had 25 snaps with a 38 grade. Malik Collins, 65 snaps with a 40 grade. Antoine Woods, 49 snaps with a 48 grade.
Mm-hmm.
And even our boys, Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, who we said have played so well this year, Leighton Vander Esch with a 52, Jalen Smith with a 57, just not great from that defensive front seven for Dallas.
Yeah, 10 missed tackles for the defense. I mean, they really just got run right over. You have to credit the Rams for making that adjustment and dominating because of it. And again, it's another team that becomes... I think we're lucky because the four remaining teams have probably been the four best teams in the NFL this season. You could make the debate between the Patriots and the Chargers, but the way they were outcoached in that game kind of renders that argument pretty, you know, pretty conclusively the other way anyway.
No, I'd say that's about right. The other interesting nugget from this game is Aaron Donald only had one pressure on 38 rushes. And people have talked about the Rams. Everybody looked at this and said, well, the Rams can't stop the run. Dallas loves to run the ball. They've got Zeke. Therefore, that's a weakness. But the other part about the run game is I think most teams, and was it Troy and this was Troy and Joe on this one, right? Troy may have made the point. He doesn't make a ton of great points, but he may have made the point that the Rams said, like, if we want to stop the run, we'll stop the run, right? I think most teams are of that mind. If they want to game plan to stop the run, they can do it. You just get the box count, right? You just throw more guys up there, and generally you're okay. We're saying Dallas got beat up in the run game because more often than not, they said, all right, we're going to back off a little bit. We're going to trust our defensive line. And if you don't have the numbers advantage, you'll give up a little bit more. I felt like the Rams tried to stop the run a little bit more. And Ndamukong Suh has a monster game against the run. He's still capable of that. So they did a better job of slowing down Zeke in that rushing attack.
They did. Sue, this is probably Sue's best game as a Ram. I don't know if he's just been sandbagging all season long until they actually hit the postseason.
Saving it for the playoffs.
Right, and then it's like, right, now I'll try.
He's been saving his whole career for the playoffs, maybe.
Which honestly wouldn't shock me if he'd been kind of mailing it in throughout the season and now he's going to turn it on when we hit the postseason.
But that's what makes the Rams dangerous, right?
Get himself a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. That's what makes the Rams dangerous.
But yeah, he had some big plays in there. There was one short yardage dive up the middle where he absolutely crushed. Was it Lyle Collins or Zach Martin that he dominated at the point of attack and essentially stuffed that entire play?
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of. And he tracked one down along the sideline too.
Yeah.
Different one? Or was that the same one?
This, I think, was his best play or best game
for a long time. Marcus Peters in the Rams secondary gave up 6 catches for 115, also with one of the worst missed tackles you're going to see. Flailing in the open field.
Yeah, that was some pretty ugly stuff.
Just something to keep an eye on with Peters. Tlaib comes back and only gives up 2 catches for 14 yards, 47 on 5 targets, 47.9 passer rating. So that's huge having Tlaib, but man, they still need Peters to either start just picking passes off like he did in Kansas City to kind of make up for the fact that he gives up a lot.
Don't forget playoff superstar Troy Hill got on the field 10 snaps, wasn't targeted. I assume that's just because you don't target Troy Hill in the playoffs.
From last year against Atlanta.
You don't throw Troy Hill's way during the playoffs. So
you just don't touch it.
No.
Just don't touch it. So Jared Goff also seals the deal with a rushing attempt, as expected.
Yeah, of course.
Anything else from this game that stood out to you? Rams offensive line, scheme, system, I think is the story of the game here.
Underrated, kind of under the wire, in fact, hot take from this game from Troy. Robert Woods is arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL. That one kind of flew by without anybody really questioning it. But
I saw everybody on Twitter questioning it. But
that's pretty.
I would say
out there.
I'm assuming that he forgot the word all around wide receiver, and it's because he's overweighing the fact that he likes to mix it up as a run blocker. That's got to be it.
Right.
Give him a pass.
I mean, here's the thing. It is crazy, right? But it's not. It's relatively close to being arguable, right? This season, Robert Woods was a top 10 wide receiver in terms of PFF grades, an 89.4 overall at the moment. That's right up there with Adam Thielen, with Tyreek Hill,
but
Devontae Adams, etc.
Let's define the grade as well. When we say a grade, we say, here's how well this guy played in his exact situation.
Yeah.
Given what we know about Sean McVay, the scheme, and all these different things that he's done, you're not going to, in isolation, say that Robert Woods is a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. At least I wouldn't. Because it's like the whole number two corner thing.
Right.
Right? The number two corner that plays great as a number two corner and has a top 10 season, I'm not calling him a top 10 cornerback in isolation, in a vacuum. He's a wide receiver one.
I think you could make the case that he's a top 10 wide receiver. Now, it would be an argument because in that range,
I think there's guys graded lower than him.
What I'm saying. In that range, you're going to be talking about guys like T.Y. Hilton, like A.J. Green.
Hilton's better.
There's a lot of good players.
Mike Evans is better.
Right. So I think you could make the argument. The idea that he's the best is kind of crazy.
Yeah, of course it's crazy. Our boy Michael Gallup started looking good, making plays.
This was a thing that he did in college as well that is people don't, I think, appreciate how stupidly hard it is to do. But when a ball is coming in over your shoulder and late on you realize that it's coming too far outside of you, and the only way to adjust to that is to essentially track it across your two different shoulders, and you almost lose sight of it in your blind spot because you got a helmet on and it's going to pass behind you. So he looks up in the air, it's coming in over his right shoulder, and you realize late on that actually it's going to come all the way in over your left shoulder. You have to swap shoulders whilst tracking the ball and trying to catch it in a bucket, right? It's extremely hard to do. That may be the single hardest thing that a receiver has to do in terms of just tracking a ball to catch it. And I've not sure I've ever seen anybody better at it than Gallup.
Willie Mays type catch, but with a helmet on, right?
There you go.
Yeah. How's that analogy? He had 6 catches for 119, 4 first downs.
Yeah. Randy Moss was always really good at that as well, but Gallup is ridiculously good at doing that for a guy that doesn't have
everything
blazing speed.
Field.
Well, this is true.
Yeah. Amari Cooper looked really fast on his touchdown. I don't know if it's because he was lined up against LaMarcus Joyner.
He's also really fast.
I mean, he hit the Jets on that one. So we'll talk about Dallas. We'll do a postmortem on Dallas later. By the way, Dak Prescott, he got away with just one of the most brutal passes of the year. He threw it right to the curl flat, dropping defender, Ebukam. Threw it right to him.
It got dropped.
Other than that, though, Dak did make a few nice plays to keep them in it, but not enough against the better team, the Los Angeles Rams. Let's get to the Sunday action starting at 1 p.m., 10 a.m. Pacific time, Sam. The Los Angeles Chargers add to the New England Patriots.
Yes.
My wife just keeps saying San Diego. She said it to me like 20 times yesterday.
That must be helpful.
No, it screwed me up on camera last week.
Yeah.
I screwed up and said San Diego. She's like, I will never change. She will never stop. By the way, I'm also, we're waiting for baby number three.
Yeah.
I want to make sure she hasn't. It's very close.
Right.
It's very close. I'm just waiting. So if I have to leave the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm
just going to monologue the last few games.
That'd be great. I could do it. Oh, man.
I'm ready. Just
pull out every bad grade and talk about all the worst players.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. That's what Sam's game recaps would be. Look how, I know the Patriots scored 41, but did you see how bad their right tackle was?
Here's everybody that sucked today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
The Saints defense was great, but this guy didn't get any pressure.
Yeah, I'm actually rooting for that now.
So I'll just wait. I've got my phone on. I'm going to keep it on the table just in case. I don't want to miss.
That's fine.
We're on call. Baby number three. Little guy's on his way soon.
Yeah.
So just.
This is questionable timing for.
It's horrible timing.
BFF baby.
No. So she's due the day after the Super Bowl.
Right.
So on one hand, it's like, all right, you're due. You set a due date. That's like the day after the season. That's great. Season's over. But she also usually, historically, with our two babies, is like a week early.
Yeah.
A bye week.
Plus, it's not
so
like.
I timed it up perfectly for the bye week.
No. Because these things aren't like, you know, accurate. You can't say, well, I'm a day after it's important, so we're good. You have to factor in the idea that's like a give or take a couple of weeks either side.
Yeah. Maybe it should have been June.
Hmm. Or April, say.
No, April's the draft.
After the draft, see.
That's too much. Not enough buffer room.
May or June. May or June.
Safe.
Yeah.
June is safe.
Which
next
you didn't
time.
Do that.
Next
yeah.
time. We'll plan it out better.
Yeah.
All right. So the Chargers had to travel to New England.
Right.
1 p.m. game. Somebody did tweet at me. He's like, and you too, I think, right? Hey, this is the balance you guys were talking about, this New England offense, right? They had the short passing game. They had the running attack. They had enough downfield passes just to keep San Diego honest or Los Angeles. See, she did it. She did it. She's in my head calling it San Diego.
Yeah.
So Los Angeles Chargers, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, this was the most embarrassing performance of the playoffs. The Chargers are just completely, they were worked. I mean, this was a complete disaster. And it wasn't just, it was everything, right? They got beaten physically. They got beaten schematically. And they had no business being on the field. What did the score end up being? 41-28. 41-28. Sounds vaguely close, right? This was basically 41-7. And then there was some late scores just to make it look a little less embarrassing. But this
was also a
disaster.
Phillip Rivers has like a legitimate Hall of Fame case, given his stats. And even though he doesn't have the Hall of Fame moment, because he threw three playoff touchdowns here, he did pad his playoff stats for his Hall of Fame case just a little bit here.
Yeah, but we're talking. So the real issues were essentially, this game was really won in the trenches, right? My concern with the Chargers team for a while was this idea that the offensive line would come back to haunt them at some point in the most important situation in the postseason.
Right.
Much like it did for the Minnesota Vikings a year ago, and that's kind of what happened to their offense. Rivers was under pressure 24 out of 53 dropbacks, which again is right in that ballpark of forget about it, it's not going to happen. Sam Tevy, the biggest disaster on that line, as we talked about, allowed 8 hurries. That's quite a large number. Every single member of the offensive line surrendered at least 3 hurries on an individual level. So they were just completely outclassed on that side of the ball. And then the other idea was what would happen to their defense. Were they going to run the same thing that they ran the week before with this 7 defensive back system, the no linebacker deal, and they were just blown off the ball by the Patriots, because whilst they also have a relatively run-heavy offense at times, the difference between them and the Baltimore Ravens is that they have this stable of monster run-blocking offensive linemen up front that will just drive you the hell off the ball. And where we were saying that one of the things that made this system function wasn't just the kind of schematic wrinkle of it, but it was the fact that their defensive linemen all won their one-on-one battles up front.
That was what it was.
This
right?
didn't happen this week. They got destroyed by...
Meaning the Chargers last week against the Ravens. It wasn't the fact that they had seven defensive backs. It was that...
Well, that was part of it, right? But that only functioned if the defensive linemen all won as well.
Right, because Justin Jones was really good. Melvin Ingram was really good. Darius Filon, Damian Square, all of their big defensive linemen played extremely well against the Ravens. Complete opposite yesterday. New England won that battle when it came to the run game. And then from a pass rush standpoint, the Patriots, even though there's a handful of games through Brady's career where you're like, oh, the Giants got to him twice and the Broncos got to him in the AFC Championship, they do have the ability to use the short passing game to slow down good pass rushing teams. So they were able to slow down Bosa and Ingram and Derwin James.
The
great pass rushers that the Los Angeles Chargers employ.
Yes. I mean, among the impressive run blocking grades for the Patriots were Trent Brown, Joe Tooney, David Andrews, Shaq Mason, and Rob Gronkowski. Gronk turned back
game.
Up and had a monster game as a run blocker. So that's four out of the five offensive linemen, your primary blocking skill position player, and the fifth guy wasn't bad. He just didn't dominate the way the other four guys did. So, again, all of their run blockers essentially won their battles, and the Chargers, they were getting blown off the ball up front, and because of that, the guys on the back end didn't have the same opportunities as they had a week ago, which is essentially unobstructed runs through to the running back, to the ball carrier. This time they actually had to navigate traffic, and that didn't go well either.
And you also have, the Patriots also have enough eye candy, too, in their run game. They don't just run one run concept.
Yep.
They run wham and power and just straight gap, and they run some zone, outside zone type stuff. And then they have all of the jet sweep game with Cordarrelle Patterson and Julian Edelman. And you don't know. They had one play that got called back with Patterson where it was like two misdirections before the Patterson end around. That was a really nice play, too. So they've got some creativity to it, and they're making their blocks. So that makes it tough to stop. Then you have James White catching the ball 15 times out of the backfield. And that was the other part about the Chargers' game plan, right? When Brady has gone up against these cover three, cover one teams, all of this Pete Carroll tree, I'm not trying to say he's figured them out, but he's had a lot of success. He had success against Seattle in the Super Bowl, Atlanta in the Super Bowl after they figured it out. Atlanta did adjust a little bit. They played a lot of man.
Right.
But these teams, when they play a ton of just their base cover three zone, he generally picks them apart. And he's like, all right, I'll take this short thing. I'll take this short thing. Here's a seam pass.
Yeah,
short seam. I mean, that's what it is.
I don't even think it's a case of he's figured them out. It's just that what he does well is the exact thing you need to be good at to have success against those defenses. So right. Remember way back the Peyton Manning versus the Seahawks defense, Super Bowl. All right, the big question going into that was that the way you beat these defenses is you have to be patient and take what they give you and essentially kill them with 1,000 paper cuts. That has been great. Like, nobody has been better than Tom Brady at doing that throughout his career. He is probably the most patient quarterback of all time in that he doesn't need to beat you with a big pass. If it takes, you know, 60 pass attempts of 5 yards, he will do that all day long and not get frustrated. Most other quarterbacks will reach a point where even if that's working, they just snap. They can't take it anymore and they've got to go deep. It's like it's just an inbuilt twitch with them, and eventually that's their undoing because they go crazy, and either they have a couple of incompletions deep and they turn the ball over on, you know, not on downs, but they have to kick it away, or they throw a costly mistake interception because of that. But that's the thing that beats them. They can't live with this idea of having to win by 1,000 paper cuts, whereas Brady, that's what he lives doing. So he carves these teams apart, and the only way of preventing that is to change what you do and go to a more aggressive man coverage kind of scheme, which he does struggle against comparatively. And again,
comparatively, right.
Right. And the Chargers didn't do that, and it cost them again. You can't.
We'll see more man with Kansas City next week, I believe.
Yeah. It was as impressive as their kind of game plan was to foil the Baltimore Ravens the week before. This was equally as impressively inept to do essentially nothing to change the thing you know won't work heading into the game.
It included a poor miscommunication on Brady's touchdown pass to Philip Dorsett in the red zone. But to your point, Brady threw the ball 44 times, no turnover-worthy plays. I mean, that's his game where they say, look, we're going to run the... They ran the ball a lot, too, but it was still a pass-heavy game. You're putting the ball in his hands and just saying, make good decision after good decision, find the open man over and over and over again and move the ball.
I mean, this was your
exemplary.
I don't know what I was going for there. This is your great example.
Exemplary.
Balance, right?
Yes.
They had balance in the run game and the pass game. They did everything. The Chargers defense basically couldn't stop anything all the way through the course of this game. The Patriots were just scoring at will in the first half. The game was done at halftime.
Yeah, the Patriots didn't really have the downfield passing game, but they were 4 for 5 at the intermediate level. 12, 19 for 22 on 0 to 9 yard passes. So they got the short stuff and they had a bunch of behind the line of scrimmage completions.
And again,
as well.
You know, balance is not, it doesn't have to be everything.
No,
right?
You don't just need, have answers.
Right. You don't need everything if they're not taking away the things you are doing. So you just need enough balance. Again, you just need enough balance to keep the defense off balance. And that doesn't necessarily have to include the deep ball if they're not stopping any of the stuff you're doing that doesn't involve the deep ball.
Neil sent me an image. I don't know if this is live.
Okay.
Tre'Varius Ward with a 74.6 special teams grade. This is breaking news from Neil Hornsby, who I know is watching live. Thank you, Neil, for being one of our live watchers. He sent me this video. Tre'Varius Ward from Kansas City, the guy we were talking about earlier, 10 special teams tackles.
Yesterday? Saturday?
No,
whenever
this season.
Right.
This season.
I was going to say, because that would be a hell of a breaking news. If we were breaking news that they had 10 special teams tackles in one game, that would be outstanding.
There's a nugget for the listeners here. So just to wrap up this Chargers-Patriots game, the Chargers, yes, they scored 28 points. That was not indicative of how well they played. The passing game was made very difficult for Phillip Rivers. That was the other matchup coming in. We said Phillip Rivers has been really good this season, but 22nd in the NFL in completion percentage against man coverage this year, and the Patriots play more man coverage than any team in the NFL, and it did have that feel of like, wow, he's throwing the ball away a lot, passes are contested, he made a few nice throws in there, you know, because they're tight windows, but just everything felt like it was challenged for the Chargers.
And then the other question was, would the Patriots have a better game plan for stopping Keenan Allen, their number one threat, than, you know, the Steelers had, where they basically put linebackers on him all game? And the Patriots' answer was to put Stephon Gilmore on him one-on-one all game. Now, when Gilmore was covering Keenan Allen, he was targeted 5 times, not just one catch. Okay,
one
the
busted
catch,
coverage.
Right, the catch was 43 yards and a touchdown because, you know, Gilmore bit on the dig as opposed to what he was actually running. But that's a pretty impressive elimination, essentially, of Keenan Allen from the game plan with one guy as opposed to letting him destroy you play after play.
And the thing that makes the Patriots system unique, and people always talk about how it's game plan oriented, it's the way they play man coverage. You know, we put it in the system like, oh, they're playing cover one. So when you play cover one, it's man coverage across the board, but you have two extra defenders, usually a safety, sometimes two safeties, sometimes a safety and a linebacker. But it's what New England does with their extra defenders that makes them unique. Because, you know, like when you're playing Madden and you pick cover one, it's like, all right, this guy's going to cover short middle, this guy's going to cover deep, and that's what those extra guys do. The Patriots take those extra guys and they're like, all right, this time you're going to bracket the slot. This time you're going to bracket Keenan Allen. This time you're going to go watch Antonio Gates. This time it's a short zone. So they move around those extra players. So they play cover one, but they all have these little nuances and you know, little adjustments to take away those players. This is what makes the matchup with Kansas City so difficult, because how much do you put on Tyreek Hill? How much do you put on Travis Kelce? They have more answers than most of your teams.
Just to contrast the Keenan Allen thing with that Pittsburgh game, against the Steelers, he was targeted 19 times as opposed to 6 total in this game. Had 14 catches as opposed to 2. So, and 2 of those incompletions were drops. So he could have destroyed the Steelers for even more than he did.
Wow.
Like, that's the difference between essentially not accounting for him at all.
How many against linebackers?
We've got 10 targets against linebackers of any kind, including outside linebackers. Another
10 out of 19 targets.
Another 5 for safeties. Only 4 of those 19 targets came against a cornerback.
Yeah, that's a problem. Domination,
right? That's an issue. That's an issue of game planning and not having an answer to what they were doing. Contrast that with what the Patriots did, which is 5 out of his 6 targets were against Gilmore alone. And Gilmore essentially took him away, other than the one play where he goofed.
And just so you know, like when you're if your team, you got a new defensive coordinator coming in and he's a man coverage guy versus a zone coverage guy, the trade-off here is man coverage generally leads to just more difficult passes. The completion percentage is going to be lower, but you're not going to get as many turnovers, whereas a zone-heavy team is going to give up the dink and dunk, but you're going to, you know, try to get the turnovers. This game kind of summed that up. Brady, you know, takes the short pass game against the zone defense, but he doesn't turn it over, right? And that's why he's good against this, because he doesn't make bad decisions for the most part. And then the Chargers throw the ball 51 times. Phillip Rivers is under 50%. Every completion is challenged and difficult.
And man coverage is a higher touchdown rate as well, right? Because when it goes bad, it goes bad.
Right. Yep.
So that's your trade-off. You get a lower completion percentage, but you get less.
But you give up more big plays.
Right. You give up fewer turnovers, but you give up more. Yep. You get fewer turnovers, but you give up more big plays. Because when it does go south, it's like it happened with Gilmore.
But a good man coverage is so frustrating for the offense, and that's why we're saying when Brady and the passing offense for the Patriots has been shut down, it's against those when teams just play that man coverage really well and actually do what the Patriots do defensively against them, and they take those extra defenders, take away the middle, take away Edelman, take away Gronk.
Well, it's because of what we were talking about, right? Brady is the best patient quarterback of all time. He will happily take an easy completion every single play and just accept that it's going to work over the long term. But if you then play man coverage, what you're doing is making all of those plays more difficult. And you're actually forcing them to kind of create, or you're forcing them to make bigger plays to have the same offensive production. And it's just harder for a guy who's really good at that. Now, if you're a team who wants the bigger plays anyway, you're more comfortable with that. So if you're one of these quarterbacks that's less patient, that wants to be attacking deeper down the field anyway, you're more comfortable with that scenario and taking the bigger chunk plays than you are with having to carve them up with 5-yard passes all day long.
Yep. So this was the most lopsided game of the weekend. The Patriots tied for second with the most points in the first half of a playoff game. It was my 1999 Jaguars are number one, Sam. They scored 42 against Dan Marino in his last game, and then the Patriots scored 35 yesterday and 35 against Tim Tebow's 2011 Broncos.
Yeah.
So the Patriots tied for second twice in that number. This felt like the one game. I said the Colts, Cowboys, and Eagles all have to play like this. Perfect game, it feels like, to pull the upset. I thought the Chargers had the best chance at an upset, but this was like old school New England.
Same.
Like, you don't come into our house and we're going to beat you in all phases.
But that's why I think this was the most disappointing performance of the weekend, because, I mean, the Chargers had a better record than the Patriots over the regular season.
They did.
Right?
Yeah.
They were a good team. Now, okay, they had some flaws that were going to become problems, this offensive line, for one, but they got outcoached. This was a terrible performance from a team that went out there and were just playing the wrong game plan almost across the board. And the Patriots, obviously being the Patriots, had the right game plan almost across the board. And they were just beaten off the field before they had a chance to get anything going. So, you know, at least the Colts were beaten up by a better team, but they weren't, you know, crazily exposed from a schematic point of view, right? They were just outfought by a team that was better.
Yeah.
The Cowboys, they at least did the right thing, right? They came up with the right game plan that has been proven to work against the Rams, and the Rams adjusted. Now, maybe you could make the argument that Dallas, you know, a really great team, would have adjusted to the adjustment and come back against them, you know, but the chances are that just plays back into the Rams' hands because that's what they want to do in the first place. So at least you give Dallas credit for showing up with the right game plan
that the
Rams just had an answer for. The Chargers showed up with the wrong game plan and never changed it.
Never adjusted. And Romo was saying, look, you can't sit back. You get a blitz. They only blitzed 7 times on 44 dropbacks, even though the Pats had 70 yards on those. But still, like, that would be the game plan against this year's Patriots, is maybe be a little bit more aggressive than you would against Brady in the past. Let's get to the final game. Philadelphia Eagles at the New Orleans Saints. It looked like the Foles magic. I mean, the beginning of that game, Breeze throws a pick. It's 14-0. Amazing start for the Eagles, but then they got shut down.
How insane is that, by the way? This game was 14-0.
Almost immediately.
Then the Eagles didn't score again.
It's also one of those things where it's like, okay, the Saints received the opening kick. Breeze throws a pick on his first pass, and you're like, all right, we're getting the ball in the second half if you're the Eagles, and everything's set up.
That was as good a start as they could have wished for, and the Saints were legitimately rattled. Like, they, you know, went for the fourth down conversion on a trick, fake punt. This was a team that I think was feeling they needed to do something pretty quickly to get back in this game, because things were starting to get ugly. And it's just, it's amazing that we went from that situation to the Eagles didn't score again for the rest of the game and ended up needing to try and, you know, execute a magical comeback right at the death. And obviously we know how that went.
So this is another point, though, too. All of these good teams kept stealing possessions, right, by going for it on fourth down.
Yeah.
The Rams did it that one time, right? Was it the Rams that did it?
I mean,
the Cowboys were aggressive.
Teams generally
aggressive
this season, like, as much as everybody wants to keep hammering teams for making these incorrect decisions, whether you went for two or not, teams have, if nothing else, teams have obviously got the message about going for it on fourth down.
Like, yeah, just to talk about
the
Jason
league
Garrett,
period, has gotten way more aggressive with that.
This feels like the easiest thing to adjust to, like, to make Dalton, to make Andy Dalton an elite quarterback is probably not going to happen overnight, right? Or ever.
Correct.
To tell your head coach, like, hey, we ran some numbers on fourth down decisions, you should probably be more aggressive.
Right.
That can happen on, like, the Saturday night before the game.
Yes.
So that also feels like Jason Garrett, who's got this conservative reputation, and he punts every time they're inside opposing territory. I mean, the Cowboys front office people could have just sat down with him and said, look, Jason, we're the underdog. We shouldn't even be here. You got to start going for it. And he just said, okay, I'm going to be more aggressive. I feel like that's an easy adjustment. My point with the Saints, though, is every time it's fourth and one, they seem like, yeah, we're going to
go for it. I think generally the league has gotten way more aggressive with that. Peter King, in his Monday column for NBC Now, what is that called?
Monday Morning in America.
There you go.
Isn't it?
I think so, yeah. He's got a bit in it from Pro Football Focus with the percentages in fourth down. So in 2016, teams went for it on fourth and short 23% of the time.
Okay.
2017, they went for it on 24% of the time.
24.
But this year, it's up to 31. So it's a pretty significant kick in the right direction of being more aggressive on those fourth and short plays. I think you're seeing that.
Can you imagine how high scoring games will be when that gets closer to 40?
Yeah,
45, 50.
We actually get to the neighborhood of the percentage of converting that play.
I saw people, because again, we don't take full credit for this. Like, other people have studied, like,
oh, of course,
go for it on fourth down more often. The run game's over. People have studied this before, but I saw the breakdown of, like, when you should go for it. Essentially, if it's fourth and one, anytime you're on, like, your own 30, the 30s, like, that's the cutoff. Anytime you get to your own 30 and it's fourth and one, go for it every time. Fourth and two is, like, the cutoff's like the 40. Fourth and three is right around the 40. I mean, it's almost like go for 75% of your fourth and shorts, fourth and three or less.
Yeah.
For the most part. So when the league gets to that point, between the successes on those plays and then the failures on those plays that lead to other scores, we're going to see even more scoring.
It was an uptick of what, 7%?
Yeah.
From the year ago.
Good math. You're our math guy.
Thanks. That 7% uptick led to 43 additional touchdowns on those drives.
That's the difference in the year, right? It was like an 80-touchdown difference last year to this
year.
So
this spike in offensive production, a huge part of it is the teams kept the drive alive on, you know, a significantly larger percentage of their drives than they did the year before and the year before that.
And this is very similar to the NBA saying a three-pointer is more valuable than a two-pointer. Now, I know that sounds easy, but take more threes because it's 1.5 times the value of a two-pointer.
Good math.
Right? How's that?
Yeah.
But it's essentially the same thing. Like, yeah, field goals have value, but I'm going to take this risk. I have a 60% chance of converting, and then I'm going to get more touchdowns.
Right. I mean, this whole drive in analytics, there is obviously a giant breadth of what analytics encompasses.
Yes.
But this is one of the most simple things, right? This is one of the most stark and easy things that the analytics says is go for fourth and short more. Because it makes everything better. It works out for your benefit in the long term. And I think, A, we're seeing it happen, and B, we're seeing the change in mentality from coaches thinking, well, I don't want to be the guy who makes a mess of it on fourth down because I'll spend the week talking about it and have to justify it. Now it's almost the other way around. If you don't go for it, you have to justify why you did your punt. Right.
Yeah.
Why you were so conservative, why you didn't go for it when the numbers say you should have, because now everybody's having access to these numbers and knows the math behind it. So now we're seeing coaches essentially forced into making those decisions because the data is out there to tell them to do it.
All right, let's get to the rest of the Eagles and Saints here. So the game starts as well as it can for the Eagles.
Yeah.
14 points right off the bat. Foles makes a beautiful touchdown pass down the field. Foles seems to have this knack, kind of like I say Cam Newton has. Cam Newton makes every pass feel like he's got 12 guys coming after him. I feel like that's... Foles was under pressure 10 times, 10 out of 31 dropbacks. That's not crazy.
No.
That's about league average. It felt like every pass he's just like, oh, there's people, I gotta drift, I gotta fall, I'm all over the place. And sometimes it works and it makes it look spectacular. He did make some really nice throws again, and then he missed a bunch too. But Foles has this weird knack for making everything almost feel like it's difficult. So he started off great and then just slowed down, and the Saints defense really cracked down.
It did.
After that slow start.
It's kind of interesting. I was thinking about this before, that we've got at least three defenses that are really capable of turning it on and being kind of the reason that their team wins a game left. And then one that I'm not sure if they're capable of that.
The Chiefs were just begging them to be average?
Well, no, even the Chiefs. Like, we've seen the Chiefs defense multiple times.
Who's the one defense that can't be good?
The Rams? I don't know if the Rams are capable of taking over a game like that.
Oh, they're better than the Chiefs. Taking over
a game? Well, they're better defense than the Chiefs. But are they capable of taking over a game the way we've seen the Chiefs defense do a few times this season? Because when the Chiefs defense cooks, those guys up front just absolutely wreck things.
If you got a better version of Marcus Peters, because when Talib is out there, things are difficult. If you got a better version of Peters, and then you've got Donald and Playoff Sue. We'll call him Playoff Sue. Just unleashed.
Okay.
Wild Dogs Sue. You've got some pieces in there that could take over games.
You've pieces in there. I just don't know if the defense as a whole can do it. It may be.
So you think the Chiefs' defense is better than the Rams?
That's not what I said. That's not what I said. I think the Rams have a better defense.
I'll let
the Chiefs
have your nuance.
Have a defense that's capable of taking over games in a way we haven't yet seen from the Rams. They might, because let's face it, the pieces they acquired on paper should be way better than they have been, but we haven't seen it yet.
No, I hear you.
Whereas the other three defenses, we've seen it from each one of those. The Saints, the Patriots, and the Chiefs have been able to turn it on at least in a game to show or to dominate in a way that they're not supposed to be able to do with the kind of quality they have.
Yeah, the Saints defense, and again, the difference between the Saints now, these last 2 years, and previous Drew Brees-led seasons is they have the ability to win multiple ways. They have balance as a team because their defense can get out there and win some games for them, as they did this season. Their running game can be a complementary piece more than they ever have. So you have guys like Eli Apple, who is ends up being a pretty nifty midseason pickup.
I wouldn't go that far.
No?
No.
He had a nice game.
He did.
But remember at the time, we said Ken Crawley's playing so poorly right now.
Yeah.
If Eli Apple is just a slight upgrade, it's a big difference.
Yeah.
He's done that.
I would still be pretty concerned about going out with him as one of my starting quarterbacks.
Look, he's had some really nice games. He's had some bad games in there too, but he's had some really nice ones.
I'm just saying I would be concerned.
Your whole point is on this like week to week in any given
week. No, he's capable of, and that's why I'm saying Apple. This is one of the defenses that's capable of turning it on like that.
So he only gave up 15 yards on 4 targets yesterday. Marshawn Lattimore with that spectacular interception of Foles earlier on, and then that easy interception to seal the deal after the drop from Alshon Jeffrey. I feel for Alshon Jeffrey, by the way.
I mean,
lost in all this. And we talk about last week, it was like, I can't believe people were bragging about the Bears beating the Eagles. It was just one missed field goal. I mean, if Alshon Jeffrey catches that ball, where are they at? About the 30-yard line?
Right. I mean, they had a legit shot to win it.
He's got the best postseason quarterback in the history of the NFL.
All time.
Nick Foles.
Yeah.
Driving him down, I was ready for them to drive down for the game-winning touchdown. I wouldn't have been surprised if it happened. This was This was a close game.
They absolutely had a chance to win it at the end, and I do feel sorry for Jeffrey because he made a ton of big plays for them in this game. And it's just if anyone deserved to have the mistake that essentially cost him the game, it shouldn't have been Jeffrey. He did more than enough to have earned that ball to bounce in a different way, and we wouldn't be talking about it.
Oh, he's definitely had some beautiful contested catches on passes that never should have been caught. The Eagles' defensive front ended up getting really banged up. Fletcher Cox in and out of the lineup, only 40 snaps. He still, some of the plays that he had, forcing holds and stuff like that, almost just winning immediately off the snap. His power is just ridiculous. I think one of the big stories here, though, the Eagles came out, and they looked like they're, okay, we're going to play some zone. We're going to just break hard on the underneath stuff, kind of force Breeze to throw the ball over our head, and Breeze's first pass is underthrown. Your boy, Cravon LeBlanc, makes a beautiful play for an interception.
He had a great game.
He did, but it looked like that was... So this is the game plan. We're going to jump the underneath stuff. We're going to limit yards after the catch, because Breeze is like Brady. He'll take the short stuff all day and then try to stretch the field when he needs to. But, he underthrew that pass. He underthrew a couple deep balls that he should have had. Taysom Hill threw the best ball of the game.
And he underthrew Taysom Hill.
Yeah, Taysom Hill had like 5 steps.
Right.
for a touchdown, and Breeze underthrew it with a clean pocket.
And not only that, but he didn't even need to, like, even if distance was the problem, right? Just put it left.
Oh, yeah. The one he could just throw it away
from
the safety.
He had lateral space to put that, even if he couldn't make it any further vertically.
Right. So I thought the game plan right off the bat looked good for the Eagles, but then I thought Breeze and the Saints did a nice job adjusting, and there was so many key third and longs where they hit the dig route. So they started hitting the intermediate stuff behind defenders. So they did a good job. Again, balance on offense for the Saints. Okay, the short stuff might not be there all the time. The deep stuff's inconsistent with Breeze. We'll hit the intermediate stuff. And that was a big key to their adjustment.
Yeah, it seemed like the Eagles had just elected not to cover dig routes in this game.
Yeah,
which
feels like
a problem.
5 for 6 for Breeze. 5 for 6 for 93 yards on 10 to 19 yard passes in between the numbers.
And if you want to talk about a receiver who legitimately has a case to be the best receiver in the NFL, Michael Thomas would be a guy that has a pretty strong argument.
Oh, absolutely.
16 targets in this game, 12 catches for 171 yards and a touchdown. Beats 6 different defenders, 4 catches. And I don't know how many of them came on those dig routes. I haven't looked that up, but it felt like a lot.
Yeah, he worked the middle of the field. He had the end zone fade from the slot. I thought the Saints also had another great play. If you guys have been paying attention to the NFL, it was the play the Patriots used on the 2-point conversion against Atlanta to tie at 28, where they have trips, 3 wide receivers to one side. They motion the outside guy in, give it to him, and they just run a quick screen right behind the 2 other receivers. The Patriots use it a ton. And then this year in the NFL, if you've been paying attention, it felt like every team was running this. Every 2-point attempt, every goal line play, everybody's running the same exact play. Quick screen, motion the guy in, run the quick screen. The Saints ran it. And I don't know if this was they ran the play and had an adjustment off of it, or if they just had a fake and then ran the corner route off of it. But I thought it was a great play. The whole NFL, when we joke about the NFL setting up the run, establishing the run as a whole, this felt like the whole NFL was setting up this fake screen for the Saints. Because the whole NFL is running it, they faked it, and then they got the open receiver. That was Drew Brees' first touchdown. So I thought that was great play design. And that's the red zone. You have to scheme some plays open, and you have to have, you know, a Drew Brees to Michael Thomas connection for a fade.
I'm still waiting for the Saints to break out something crazy to Drew Brees when he splits out wide as a wide receiver in Taysom Hill's
Super Bowl.
That's what I'm saying, right? They haven't broken it out yet. All season long, Drew Brees has just been standing there doing nothing, looking bored. Sooner or later, he's going to do that and then start running downfield for a touchdown.
Do you think ever in NFL history, and we can't even look this up, on back-to-back plays, Taysom Hill was the targeted receiver on a 40-plus yard pass,
right,
and on the next play threw a 40-plus yard pass. It was negated, but it was the best throw of the game, and he put it on. And as he's doing it, I turned to my wife. I was like, oh, every time he throws deep, it's just a disaster. They should never do this. Oh, it's like, oh, wow.
Has any player in NFL history ever been hosed more on back-to-back plays? He got robbed of catching a 40-yard touchdown. Then he got robbed of throwing one the next play because of a holding call.
It's not her.
No? Okay.
Just push notification.
Just a notification.
Devin White has declared for the NFL draft.
Yeah, there you go.
For LSU. As expected.
Yes.
He might show up in my mock draft tomorrow. Check it out tomorrow.
Slick teaser.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
You're right. When you think about that, Taysom Hill, 40-yard touchdown as a receiver.
Right.
Hosed. 40-yard touchdown as a passer.
Passer. Hosed.
Man. Taysom Hill, MVP of the game.
Right. Drew Brees just holding
Drew
him back.
Drew Brees just holding Taysom down. Yeah. Anyway. So the end result was as expected.
Yeah.
But this was another one that didn't go the way I expected it to go. I thought, you know, maybe some more points. The Saints only scoring 20 in the dome. Like, I just give a ton of credit to this Eagles defense and the way they've started to play down the stretch. You have to wonder with the Saints, when they started to struggle at times offensively down the stretch, the fact that you got Ted Ginn out there and you've got Keith Kirkwood out there, and when Breeze was on fire through about week 12, he was throwing these guys open. He was great. But at some point, are there lack of non-Michael Thomas playmakers and Alvin Kamara playmakers? Is that going to catch up to them?
I don't think so. I think if nothing else, we're going to be facing a team that doesn't have the Eagles defensive front, and that's going to help.
That's
like
true.
What we were saying heading into this game is that it was an interesting matchup because the Eagles still have the best defensive front in the game, but the Saints are equipped to get the ball out of Drew Brees' hands fast and essentially negate that the way they did the first time around. Now, it turns out that's a lot easier to do when you're facing, you know, secondary that's been thrown together on the back of a napkin during the week, and none of those guys have any business being out there playing together. This secondary by the Eagles is actually capable of holding up for a little bit, so the Saints couldn't just get the ball out of their hands immediately. You know, Drew Brees' average time to throw in this game was almost 2.6 seconds. That's like probably 3/10 faster than I would have thought it would be going into this game if they wanted to negate that Eagles defensive front.
Slower, you mean, right?
Yeah, sorry, slower.
Yeah.
So they didn't have the quick passing game that was supposed to be there, and that meant that the Eagles' front could actually get after him and slow everything down and really make this a tighter game. But
they were so banged up.
Right, and it wasn't enough to get it done overall. But the point is, that's why the game was a little bit closer and the Saints didn't just run away with offense. Next week, you're going to be playing the Rams. Can the Rams do that to you? You know, if you figure out a way of getting Aaron Donald blocked, they don't have that much else to be able to get after you, and at which point you should see the Saints start to put up points again.
They did a great job on Donald the first time around.
Right.
Play action game, slowing him down and all that stuff. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. The end of the season review for the Eagles, we won't get into all of the detail, but you know, everybody's saying, well, they got this decision to make now, Nick Foles or Carson Wentz. I mean, I don't think it's a decision. Nick Foles, nice little run by him. Give him a ton of credit. Again, one of the weirdest NFL careers you'll ever see. One of the best postseason runs you'll ever see last year. And then, you know, last week he was good, not great against the Bears, but it's going to be Carson Wentz's team going forward.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed that we didn't see him win another Super Bowl just for the problems it would give the Eagles having to make that decision.
And like, then the Hall of Fame voting, right? Obviously. So Nick Foles has to go in. But Eli Manning has to go in, and poor Phillip Rivers. No.
Now you know, they're going to get rid of Nick Foles. Like, it's going to cost him $20 million to keep him, and that's not happening. So he'll go somewhere.
Who's going to pay Nick Foles?
The Jags. The Jags are going to hand Nick Foles a boatload of money to suck.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the ironic thing is, right, Nick Foles, so as impressive as these runs have been, if you gave Nick Foles 16 games starting next season, what do you think his PFF grade would be?
73.
Right. Which would be what? Where does that rank you?
Off the top of my head, just 73. It's probably 22nd.
Okay. Off the top of your head, 73 overall PFF grade, which would rank you 22nd. And if I can get the site to load, then I can stop.
Oh, I thought you were giving me the answer rather than...
No, I was. If I get the site to load, then I could stop talking and be able to send. 73
grade.
73 grade, which would rank you, what did you say?
I said 22nd.
Damn you. That would rank you 21st. Actually, it would rank you 22nd because Derek Carr finished the season 21st with 73.4. So if 73 would actually put him where Joe Flacco is right now, which is 22nd. You should not be able to do that.
Sam gets very angry when I guess random stuff almost perfectly.
Right. You should not.
It happens very often.
You shouldn't be able to just guess that.
I have a feel for our quarterback rating.
No.
I just have a feel.
You have some sort of weird...
You guys can have a feel too. If you have PFF Elite Premium Stats 2.0, study it like Steve does, you'll know all this stuff.
No, you don't get that because you study. You get that because you have some sort of weird connection tapped into the matrix somehow.
I do.
Right.
So credit the Saints. They pull off the win 20-14 against the Eagles. I think ultimately when you look at it, the Eagles were just overmatched in some of the wrong places in the secondary and all that stuff. I love the way they came together down the stretch, but it was just really tough. And Nick Foles still, you know,
overachieved a lot. The secondary did have its problems, but ultimately they lost because they didn't score after getting 14.
Yeah. No, that was a big factor. Right. I thought they were going to go down and score, though.
Right. The secondary did get beaten on some plays, but they still did hold the Saints to 20 points overall.
Right.
And the Eagles had the ball late in the game, driving to win.
They did.
Before Alshon Jeffrey, you know, dropped.
Don't
it.
Blame Nick Foles for the last interception, though.
I didn't.
Of course, it's not his fault. I'm not saying you are. I'm
Alshon
just telling
Jeffrey.
Everyone. Do not blame Nick Foles for that.
You could blame him for the other one.
So all four teams move on. They all had byes. They all played at home. I think they're the four best teams in the NFL, and next weekend should be some pretty good football games.
Right. The funny thing is I've seen people like taking victory laps over predicting this four, you know, like back in October. Like, these were the best four teams. Like, if you were taking a stab at it in October, this is probably what you would end up with.
Everybody in October is like, oh, Rams, Chiefs, Super Bowl. Oh, no, it's going to be Chiefs, Saints. Yeah,
right.
Of course, everybody's been looking at these teams.
Yeah, you can't really take too much of a victory lap on this.
I had the Patriots in the AFC Championship. It's the eighth straight year they've been here.
Right. Really going out on a limb there.
Big limb. All right, let's do one postmortem. It's the Dallas Cowboys.
One?
Okay, just one. It's a long podcast here today, Sam. What time did we start?
Like 10:35?
Oh, yeah. We're over an hour.
Okay.
But the people love content. It's the playoffs. People love content. I don't care. But we're going to do the Cowboys, just the Cowboys.
All right.
Because we have other stuff to get to. Dallas Cowboys, what went wrong this season? Why did they lose? Can I explain? Because the talk right now is, what do the Cowboys do? Uh-huh. Such a disappointment.
Yeah.
Is it really, though? Is it really that disappointing of a season that they didn't make the NFC Championship? Was anybody expecting them to go to the NFC Championship?
Well, only once they won the wild card game.
Oh, everybody that wins a wild card game is hot and on a roll, and they should win.
Yes. Once you win a wild card game, you've now got the monkey off your back. You won the first playoff game since like 1972 or whatever it was. And now they get to roll to the Super Bowl again.
So I like to look at coaches in one of two ways. Did you overachieve or did you underachieve? Right. Okay. And I know people want fresh blood in there, and they wanted to get rid of Jason Garrett after like week 8 or whatever, and then all of a sudden they turned it around. And I don't really have an opinion on what they do with Jason Garrett. I don't even want to call for his head or say he deserves the job. But I think if you look at this season, the Cowboys overachieved. They overachieved. They won the division. Nobody expected them to win. They won a wild card game. They never should have beaten the Rams on the road in the divisional round. They overachieved and went, this was as expected. Once they got to the divisional round, they're supposed to lose. Like, that's it. They overachieved and then hit expectation in the divisional round, which is lose. They need better talent in a couple spots on offense. They need more playmakers. We saw Michael Gallup emerged opposite Amari Cooper. That was great. That made the passing offense much better down the stretch. You need more consistent play from Dak Prescott. I mean, they are what they are.
Yeah. Ultimately, their cause of death was not being good enough. Right.
That's it.
And it kind of actually where it really manifested itself is that it meant that they had to go on the road at some point in the playoffs.
Cause of death. Travel.
Travel.
Yes.
Cause of death.
Number one
travel.
Cause of death.
7-1 at home, 3-5 on the road in the regular season. Then obviously you win another game at home.
So 3-6.
1-1 in terms of road home splits in the postseason. So had this team had home field advantage throughout the playoffs, maybe they would have been a legitimate Super Bowl contender. But they didn't because they weren't good enough when they had to travel the first time round. So they had to go somewhere. Albeit a place where, you know, if you're going to travel somewhere, that was a pretty strong away presence for the Dallas Cowboys.
There
was a ton of Dallas fans in Los Angeles.
They play out there in training camp every year because that's
right.
where they
But
they
still, it camp. Wasn't being at home where this team is completely different within that dome in Jerry World.
I will say this. I mean, I wrote before the season how much I loved the way they were building the defensive side of the ball. It's all homegrown talent from DeMarcus Lawrence to Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch, Byron Jones, Chidobe Awuzie, Xavier Woods. I think all of those guys, Anthony Brown, Jordan Lewis, they have a bright future on the defense. They have to figure out what to do with DeMarcus Lawrence, of course. I think they have a lot of work to do on the defensive front. Taco Charlton hasn't really lived up to his first-round hype.
Not at all.
Malik Collins has struggled. The defensive tackles, as a whole, have not been very good. So they've got a lot of work to do, I think, on the defensive front. And then I think you just continue to throw playmakers on the offensive side.
Primary cause of death, travel.
Travel.
Secondary cause of death.
I think the defensive front. If we're talking about why they die Saturday night, the front seven was horrendous.
Yeah.
Front seven.
Yeah, part of it was to get the game plan.
Scheme
designed.
Too. Yeah, right. Scheme.
So, okay. Secondary cause of death, defensive front talent.
There you go.
Okay.
Here's the difference, right? The Chargers a couple weeks ago, their scheme won because their defensive line won,
right.
as we said. Dallas's scheme lost because their players lost. They put pressure on their defensive line to win their blocks, and they did not.
Yeah.
So a lot of pressure on the D-line, but they were unable to come through.
Right. This idea of putting your players in the best position to succeed, sometimes the game plan is going to dictate that you put certain players in a disadvantageous position or in a position that is not their best spot to succeed. And those guys need to stand up and be counted because the game plan needs them to do that
right.
week. Now, if those guys suck that week, that's a problem.
Well, it's kind of like if you're able to defend the run with fewer players, you're taking a chance. But if you can do it, boy, does that have great benefits. That's kind of like there was a reach block in one of the Rams runs that Gurley ran through a hole a mile wide.
Yeah.
If you can reach block a player, you essentially like you steal an extra gap away from the defense. If you can make this really, really difficult block, you're going to win the play. Most of the time, you're going to lose the block, though. That's how I felt about Dallas and their game plan. Also, the offensive line, they battled injuries and stuff like that, and they went from, and Travis Frederick missed the entire season. So you just don't have that same dominant offensive line in Dallas. You had two elite players instead of three with Zach Martin and Tyron Smith and everyone around them. You had Connor Williams struggling, Xavier Suafilo struggling. You just had a lot of guys. Joe Looney at center, just not even close to what Travis Frederick brought. So the offensive line was completely different this year as well.
Yeah. Is Dak Prescott good enough to win a Super Bowl for the Cowboys?
I think he is. I think...
Well, actually, so hang on. Here's the first... Let me give you a question before that one. Is Dak Prescott closer to 2018 Dak or 2016 rookie Dak?
You mean 2017?
2016.
Is
Dak Prescott overall, generally, in optimum circumstances, closer to 2016 or 2018?
I think it's more 2018, which is mid-tier.
Right.
Average quarterback. He looked like he was this.
So then the question is, can that guy win a Super Bowl?
Yes, mid-tier quarterbacks can win the Super Bowl in the NFL this year. I think they can.
Still.
But it just takes so much around them. I think that the thing with Dak is I think they can unleash him down the field a little bit more. He only threw one pass over 20 yards the other day. It was when he rolled out and dropped the ball in that Gallup made, right? That nice catch. He can throw down the field all right. I think they have to let him do it a little bit more. He's one of those volatile type of quarterbacks, the Jameis-y types, who's going to have some misses where you're just like, how do you miss that? You're an NFL quarterback,
yeah,
and then comes back and makes enough good throws. Those types of guys can win games for you. You're just rolling the dice.
Yeah.
You just don't know what you're going to get. But if you get the good, plus what he adds in the run game, that's the other thing. If you scheme up enough runs for him, kind of like Cam, scheme up enough runs for him, let him scramble a little bit, and just steal extra first downs, there's enough in Dak there. I don't trust him as a passer. I don't think he's a great passer.
No.
But I think there's enough in there if everything else around him is built well.
Okay. So we're not going to put him down as tertiary cause of death. But I will say that he was the worst quarterback in the divisional weekend. And therefore,
I'm shocked. His grade ended up pretty good. And he had the worst pass of divisional weekend when he just threw it right to the dropping zone defender.
Yeah.
That was dropped for a dropped interception. So... That's it. Dallas, you are who
Dead.
We thought you were. You overachieved. So I don't know what you guys want to do going forward, Cowboys, but I thought you guys had a good season. Be happy with the season, something to build off of.
I mean, they won a playoff game.
Yeah.
First time they've done that in a while.
Yeah, so how about that? That's a good year. After everybody wrote you off, how about it? All right, that'll do it for the PFF NFL podcast. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. I might be back later in the week, or Mike Renner. We'll be back. Mike Renner is just waiting in the bullpen for when I have my child.
Right.
And he'll be taking over. We'll do some conference championship previews. My plan, I have a mock draft coming out this week. I was going to do a little mock draft and draft discussion with Mike for half the podcast on Thursday. We'll see what happens. We're day to day. Any updates?
Day to day.
Nope. Just Devin
just
White declaring for the draft. No baby.
Just taking it one day at a time.
That's all we can do when you're waiting on a baby who's 3 weeks early.
Yeah.
Come on, Kelly. Bye week. Wait till the bye week, honey. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Be sure to go get your Premium Stats 2.0, all a part of your PFF Elite package. Great time of year for that. Get all the playoff grades and, of course, free agency. We have a ton of free agent and draft content coming up right around the corner, Sam. So
yeah, quarterback annual as well coming out.
Yes.
And special something planned for February that we can't yet put out there.
We do.
We can at least tease it.
We hope it all
something
works out.
Something special coming for February.
God willing. We'll do that. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We'll chat again on Thursday. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it. After the fact, I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray in his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.